So, okay, there's the brown tape. But nonetheless, even if you felt secure in your own place, whether you're naive or not, that's not relevant.
I definitely was. So.
Okay, despite naivete, that's the greater validity is that you did feel safe, at least in your own place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just assumed that, you know, that it was everybody working together and trying to make things better.
But nonetheless, then you did hear about, Marty Klisch, of course, that's a plane, and it could have been an accident, could have been shot down, right. Could have been a bomb, who knows. But then later, there are deliberate assassinations.
Well, the thing was with Fred was very scary, but he was in a forward area, which we didn't think was the place that IBSers should be to begin with. We didn't think that was a good place for IBSers to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that sort of confirmed to us that that was the wrong place, and that no IBSers should be sent to such a place, but only to places that were firmly within, you know, the RLG areas, and not on the edges. We ourselves did not realize until a long time later, at least I can't speak for Lynn, but I certainly didn't realize till a long time later that even though we were not called a forward area, we sure were pretty forward.
I was going to ask you that. I mean,
but we didn't know that. It wasn't called that. We didn't, but there were, we were told there were maybe 100 Patet Lao on the other side of the Snake Mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's just very close. So
yeah.
We did, but we weren't, we were thinking about our work. We were just working.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just wanted to do this work. It was so needed. I mean, there were children who were so sick. One little boy who, when I went to visit him, well, he would have died if we hadn't taken him in to the medical team, the Indian medical team from India, that was in Pakistan, which is 30-some kilometers away. He would have died.
Yeah.
There was so many things like that, the flooding, and people didn't have enough to eat, and so we were distributing food, and, you know, there's just people needing to live. And so you really didn't think about the war being as close as it really was.
Yeah, yeah, because just tonight you told me that villagers told you you had a Patet Lao in your Jeep the other day. So it's like very close.
Right, but see, we didn't think that they, I mean, I didn't think, I can't say we, I didn't think that they would have any reason to be mad at me because I was just helping the village.
Right.
And that's what I believed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I didn't feel like they would want to hurt me because I was just trying to help the people they were trying to help. So why would they want to hurt me? It never occurred to me. I didn't even think this far. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I just worked.
No, I understand. I mean, I told you about my own experience and how if I did it today, I'd be out of there like a shot, you know?
And you would you want your child to be in this place, et cetera, et cetera? No, no,
no. No.
But when you're the person there yourself, you just say, oh, there's work and it needs to be done and these people need this and we can do this and let's do this together and you just wake up every day and do things.
Right, right. Okay. Now, you don't have to convince me, but I do explore this from time to time because it's so amazing to people when they think back.
Oh, yes.
And amazing to me when I think back, too. So.
Yeah. But also, I don't think, I mean, I didn't have a big picture of what was going on. And certainly going, I was only home briefly in 65, two or three months. There wasn't that much that you heard or read about in 1965.
Especially
in
Laos.
In the summer and Laos. No, and so I went back to an area of the world that I loved and knew only that people were welcoming and there was work to do and I could do it. And so I was glad to do it.
You saw it every day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, there are some. You did mention that you thought that people should not be in the forward areas.
Absolutely. Clearly. Oh, when that happened to Fred, I just felt so terrible. He was a birthright Quaker. He truly believed in the work that he was doing. He was this gentle and kind and nice young man. And it also seemed to mark a change because it had been as though IVS had been charmed in Laos. I mean, people had not been attacked up to that point. I don't know exactly if something else had happened that I don't recall, but that marks it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point, it seemed that what I had said earlier, that, you know, we were working hard and trying to help the Lao people, and that seemed to be fine with everybody. So it seemed like a change in attitude, or why would you come and hurt this young man and his assistant? I mean, kill this young man and his assistant, who are working so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that should have been, you know, a call to, maybe it's just because you're Americans, maybe it's because there are larger issues out there. But I still didn't think like that. I just thought how unfair it was for such a good person's life to be wasted. So I was still thinking too small.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing wrong with thinking that small, because it is a waste.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible waste of anyone's life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, the bigger picture still didn't come to me.
Okay.
I still wasn't seeing the bigger picture.
So in retrospect,
we left in July of 67.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, so even though you started a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Your date of termination from service was identical.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
That was one of the advantages of being a wife, I suppose. I mean, I obviously didn't get paid for the time I didn't serve, so.
True. So I guess that evens it out a bit.
Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't all that different, because he left in July and I joined in August. So it was like,
yeah. Hardly worth counting up.
Right. Yeah.
When Scheidler was killed, should that have been only a indication that people should be moved back from the forward areas? Or did that indicate that maybe IBS was involved in something in a country where maybe the programs were not going to work?
I wouldn't have thought that at that time, I know. I mean, no, I didn't think that at that time, because we could actually see things happening in our village. I mean, people learning to read and write, and
uh-huh.
people having a little bit better situation than they had before, and people working together in some ways that they hadn't worked together before.
Okay.
So it seemed that in villages that were not on the edge, though later, as I say, I think we were rather on the edge, but that you could work and help people, and people's lives go on in other parts of a country, no matter what's happening in the war zones of a country.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you believe in helping people, there are always risks. It's just that there are some risks that are too ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. All right. Now, that's how you felt then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, looking back now,
mm-hmm.
now, because now you say you realize that you were on the edge.
Oh, but now I've read all kinds of books, and I've talked to people, and, I mean, you know, retrospect is never quite the same. There's certainly no way that I believe that a young person with a liberal arts degree in English would have had the kind of perspective that one can have with hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that you could have had it.
No, I don't want you to say that you should have had it then. But just with the benefit of all that you've got now, in terms of maturity and academic knowledge, do you look back now and say, yes, I was wrong, maybe we should not have been there, because we were on the edge. And maybe it would not be good for IVS Laos to have maintained programs, at least in any rural area, because security was so bad, even though there was only Scheidler killed.
Well, I think I have a different perspective on that.
Okay.
I think IVS should have had the programs.
Okay.
But I think that it would have probably been better, not necessarily all the way that you might like, but just to have been IVS. And not to have that. I mean, I thought that it was right when IVS Vietnam said, we shouldn't be so hooked up with USAID.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be an international group, not a national group. And I think it was unfair to the volunteers who were not U.S. nationals to have us so closely tied up with the U.S. government. On the other hand, I also think that you don't just not work in a place because you don't. I mean, I would have preferred if IVS had just been IVS, okay, and then I would have still wanted to work there. You see what I'm saying? Even now,
if it didn't have an AID link up,
I think it would have been better and healthier for everyone.
Uh-huh.
It would still have been dangerous,
okay.
Because who can tell which one is an American and which one is a Canadian and which one is an Australian and which one is an Englishman, okay?
Uh-huh.
If someone had decided on the other side that we shouldn't be there. On the other hand, if that were the case, No, that would have been my preference, that it hadn't had its contract with USAID, and that it had just been IVS.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I still think the work needed to be done, and I still think the people that helped, and the children that got fed during the flood, and all those kinds of things were the right thing to do.
Okay.
I do.
No, I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but you know, just going through.
Yeah, but if it's going to be international voluntary services,
mm-hmm.
then it shouldn't be linked with anybody's government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean that's the one thing, and you know when I joined Peace Corps, I absolutely knew and was proud and happy to be a part of a U.S. government organization. I knew it was U.S. government, but to me it was the part of the U.S. government that was working for peace and understanding between people.
Correct.
And so I knew clearly what I was doing, but when I joined IVS, I did not understand its link to AID. I didn't know about that till I got to Laos.
Right.
So that's the part that, you know, I think that USAID as a general organization was doing lots of good things, but it was also doing things that I wouldn't have approved of if I'd known about it.
Uh-huh.
And consequently, I would rather have had it just have IVS independent.
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, I don't know if the Lao government would have welcomed IVS if it had been totally independent, the RLG.
Or if it would have had the wherewithal to do what it did.
Yeah, but in there was so much that you could do in Laos without having a whole lot of wherewithal. You definitely needed, and I don't know the funding and financial situation at that time. You definitely needed the money to support the volunteer. But you didn't need to have, like I told you, the house that we had or PX privileges or anything fancy. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you could live very well. You needed access to medical care. You needed, you know, emergency, but you could have had health insurance, maybe emergency exit for the people who got malaria, like Lou Wolfe and Terry Collins. You needed that kind of support for the volunteer.
Yeah, Lou described his
disease.
Oh, terrible. He was really bad off.
Yeah, Lou and Terry nearly died.
Yeah.
We were in the same province.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn got malaria, too.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't get that kind.
Yeah, yeah, there are different strains of everything.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But, so you need the right support for a volunteer, but you don't need the tremendous infrastructure to do good work in
mm-hmm.
in Laos that was out there. That infrastructure was out there to support people who weren't volunteers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, in our sense of volunteer, I mean, they were career professionals
mm-hmm.
in development work, and so they had different needs and expectations. So I think that you could, and I think IVS has proved that you can put out teams without the elaborate structure that USAID has.
Okay.
And
yes, they do.
I mean, they've proved that in modern times. I mean,
mm-hmm.
in modern, in recent times.
Currently. Contemporary people
whatever.
Are doing that. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
When you were in your assignment, IVS volunteers were also in Don Duc. Were they not?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And mostly teaching English.
Mm-hmm.
And availing themselves of PX privileges and the cheeseburgers at the Kilometer 6, et cetera, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a contrast to your lifestyle.
Absolutely.
I'll
have mine any day.
I was going to ask you for your opinion.
I would live in a Lao village any day than live in a town and live like that. No.
Mm-hmm.
That's my. I loved every minute of living in that village. I learned so much from the people.
Should IVS have made strict policies about the lifestyles of folks who were living at Don Duc?
No, I think if it's a volunteer, or I mean, I think there are certain things that I would have commented on, but that's another matter. But I mean, I think that, you know, moderation in all things makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I think to say you can never have a cheeseburger is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I think that volunteers should be encouraged to build up their relationships with the Lao community and not hang out in the American community.
Mm-hmm.
But I only think that you can suggest that and have it as a policy and a standard that people strive to hold to. I don't think you can say, don't you go over there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not very adult. I mean, every once in a while you get a little homesick. If a hamburger is going to make somebody happy, great. <You know? laughs> I mean, far better than having to send them home later.
Yes, because that would happen on occasion.
Yeah, you know, somebody gets bad news from home or has a bad day or whatever. Sometimes silly little home-like things can cheer you up, so fine.
Yeah, and save you
and
from deep depression.
And some people, you know, a lot of people were single. I mean, if you're a married couple, you can help each other out. And
mm-hmm.
if someone is not, things aren't going well in their work, they can help the other one through the time. But if you're by yourself, you don't have that. So I think you, those arbitrary kinds of decisions shouldn't be made.
Yeah. I put it back on again.
Okay.
To some extent, I think you've already sort of touched on this, if only to say that you, when you were just talking about the IVS AID linkage and
mm-hmm.
the problems that you had with that. But what did you? How would you define the IVS's mission and goals?
Well, you know, there was a song that we used to sing. I couldn't sing it anymore. I mean, that we actually sang about IBS and, you know, sort of the world perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I remember it, and maybe if I saw the lyrics, I might not feel the same way now, but it was somewhat idealistic, and I was too. I felt that it was more a person-to-person kind of, you know, what can I contribute to help you, and what can I learn from you, and to help me, and how can we interact in a more human way.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I learned so much from the Lao people. I could never possibly give back equal to what I learned from them. I mean, they just totally changed my life. So that's what I think the mission is. The mission is to just share and help each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I believed in.
And do you think IBS, well, at least in your own case, you'd probably say came very close to achieving all of those goals?
I'm sure it would be on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Life is what it is. Each person ends in a different place with a different group of people and is able to move and have things happen, or maybe they aren't, and it may not be that individual's call. It's a much larger situation.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult time to be in Laos for in many areas, and I think we were very privileged to be where we were and to be able to work with the people that we did work with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was just good luck, I guess.
Yeah. As a sort of wrap up, if only because Lynn has to have some time too.
Some time too. Because mm-hmm.
We're approaching about 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
Like to ask you how, and this could be a really wide open question. You just sort of got into it, but how IBS has affected your life. In some concrete ways or whatever.
Well, philosophically,
because you said it totally changed my life. You
know? Well, I have to give Thailand credit for introducing me to the area and giving me a start.
Uh-huh.
But I think that the sharing and the kind of Buddhism that I found in the village, the kind of life that I found in the village, in terms of the way people shared with each other and worked with each other, made me rethink a lot of things. Laos was my real introduction to Buddhism. I don't think that I learned anywhere near as much as a English teacher in Thailand as I did as a villager living in a village in Laos.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a villager.
And of course the language, and whenever you learn a language, it helps to change your perspective on the world.
Mm-hmm.
When you speak that language, you are moving into a different worldview and a different way of being. Some of the ways of just living with the forest, just interacting with the forest the way that villagers do, was new to me.
Uh-huh.
Being a city girl. So it certainly made me think about my environment in a totally new way. The relationship of siblings to each other, the sibling-like relationships of neighbors to each other in a village, all of these were very new and interesting to me. And I think it made me, well, many of the things that I learned, I brought hopefully into our own family here in the U.S. So, and of course, what I chose to do in my career, I mean, the degrees that I got, the things that I studied, were, it's a mix of Thai and Lao, but it's much stronger from the Lao end. So it was a blessing for me to have had the opportunity to be an IVSR. It built on the Peace Corps Thailand experience, and so they go together as a unit, but it was truly unique, and I still have a very special, special place in my heart for Laos.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. Just, you might say what you do now.
I teach Lao in the Southeast Asian Studies Summer Institute. I started the first Lao course in 1986. And I taught Lao there at Northern Illinois University and at University of Hawaii and the University of Wisconsin and at Arizona State University.
And in all the CSEs?
In those CSEs. Other people have taught at other times. I haven't taught every single CSE, but...
You're also associated with the Southeast Asia program here at Wisconsin.
Right, I'm a fellow in the Center for Southeast Asian Studies, and I was the language director of the Southeast Asia... of CSE, the Southeast Asian Studies Summer Institute, for 2 years when I was here, and I'm chair of the CSE Language Committee and on the Executive Committee for CSE.
Yeah.
And I'm also president of the Council of Teachers of Southeast Asian Languages.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh. Wow, that's quite a string of things. Okay, so some people, you know, I think everyone, of course, is always changed by the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, and it's always, of course, personal. For some, it also becomes professional.
Right.
To some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely to the extent of your own, especially considering that it was not a continuation of a pre-existing interest in Southeast Asia.
No.
No, the Southeast Asia only came as the third country listed because of Pop's war stories.
Right.
So when you think of that odyssey,
right?
You know, it's really, you know, even if you mix in the Peace Corps as part of the whole,
mm-hmm.
still, it's a minor part of the whole.
Yeah, yeah. You know? It's the Lao thing is the Lao stuff.
Yeah. So I think probably Lynn's time.
Oh, definitely.
So I thank you very much. This has been fun.
This has been interesting, just talking about those times.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you are wrapped up in it all the time.
Yeah.
So I'll turn this off and say thank you much.
Mm-hmm.